We are back with Dr. David Borton, solar boat builder and physicist. Dr. Borton, can you give us an update on the solar boats?
Yes. Well, the third boat, the 44-foot boat, has been tested by the Coast Guard. This was an endurance and sea trial test. The sun was turned off, the solar panels were disconnected, and three of the four battery banks were disconnected to test how well this would survive in this very much hobbled condition. And it did very well, and so that was a very great day.
On the sea?
Well, on the Hudson River.
Is it a sea vessel, though? It could go on the sea.
It could go on the sea, but the Coast Guard is inspecting it for inland waters.
Okay.
That would include Long Island Sound, the Hudson River, that kind of thing.
But secretly, could you and your wife just take it on a drive and go out to the Atlantic?
Yes, we could take it on the Atlantic and go down the inland waterway, go to Florida, do the Great Loop. That kind of thing would be great fun.
So can you give us a date as to when the people of Troy can see the solar cell 44?
I wish I could. I can't.
Okay. I think that's all the information I'm getting. So last time we were talking about Neil Armstrong. And do you remember in the book of First Man, did he talk about what he ate on his journey?
Yeah, but not a whole lot. You basically mix water with these dry packets and eat them hot or cold.
Just the classic astronaut food.
I believe that's correct.
When I was little, that's all I wanted to try was the astronaut ice cream.
You know, you can get that at backpacking stores.
Yeah. Have you tried it?
Yeah. It's not great, but if you were eating some of the other stuff, it might taste pretty good.
So would Neil Armstrong describe himself as an environmentalist, given what he saw once he got out onto the moon and looked back at planet Earth from that perspective? It's so exciting to think about that.
Well, yes, I think that he recognized looking at the Earth and looking at the Earth's atmosphere, as we said last time, is this very thin layer of air that is held by gravity to the Earth that keeps us alive. Solar energy comes in, warms up the surface of the Earth, provides all the food, provides distilled water, keeps us alive. So, I'm sure he recognized that and thought about that, but he had so many things to think about in terms of doing his job of flying to the moon, around the moon, landing on the moon, getting back up, that he was very occupied with details of flying to the moon and back.
Right, which is why I would love to read the book. And I appreciate everything you said in the last interview about the details of the pressure on him to hit the right button at the right time to go, you know, from the atmosphere out towards the moon. This is kind of a personal question, but would you say, given that you're trying to educate people about the atmosphere, and it's a delicate balance, the sun's energy coming in, the way that that impacts the water cycle and how life works. But would you say just at this stage in humanity with the environmental issues that we're facing, that to a certain extent, the work with solar boats and environmental commitment is not only for other people, but also kind of like looking yourself in the mirror and feeling like as a human, you're doing something in the face of climate change?
Yes. You said it was a delicate balance, and that's a very good way of saying it. And so when we change the carbon dioxide concentration in the Earth, we are changing that balance. And changing that balance is something that really affects things.
We know that due to carbon emissions, the atmosphere, well, how would you describe the impact again? Briefly.
Well, let me talk about it in terms of a pot of beans on the stove. Okay? If you have a pot of beans in an open pot on the stove and you have it on simmer, and now the pot that I have has a clear lid, and if I put a lid on top of that simmering pot of beans, what happens?
It gets a little hotter.
Yeah, it starts to boil more. Okay.
It doesn't just get a little hotter.
Okay. So that's basically what happens when you add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere of the Earth. You're putting the lid on the pot and holding more heat in. If you hold more heat in, you get harder boiling, get hotter surface temperatures, that kind of thing.
Because for the sake of the metaphor, the glass lid on the pot is the trapped gases within the atmosphere.
Yeah, the lid just adds another layer of essentially atmosphere holding in the heat on the Earth. And you mentioned it was a delicate balance, so you've now changed the balance. So in fact, more heat is coming in and getting stored on the Earth, and that's causing the oceans to get hotter, the atmosphere to get hotter, and like the pot of beans that boils harder, if you put more energy into the atmosphere, it's going to react to that more energy. It's going to have more energy for bigger storms, more violent storms, more frequent droughts, so that, yes, that energy actually makes a big difference to the Earth.
So in the summer, when you have the car's windows open, it's warm in the car, but then you roll things up and you're like baking in there.
Yes.
It's a similar
That's phenomena. Another very good example that the window, when you roll up a car window, you're changing the window, just like carbon dioxide changes the window of the atmosphere. And as you make that window thicker, more energy, more heat gets trapped. And in the car, it gets hot, hot enough to kill kids, right? And on the Earth, it's getting hot, hot enough to change actually the climate of the Earth.
You know, I think what I love about the solar cell is that one time you and I walked around the steampunk festival and we had a special broadcast of Equality Under the Law, Practical Physics at the steampunk festival. And there's a lot of performance at the steampunk festival, people performing their imagination of an alternative reality. But I think that people have to actually see something different. They have to see a different story. So one of the reasons why people at the steampunk festival like to perform is that they want to feel like they could inhabit for a moment a different Earth. And I think what's so cool about the solar cell is that people actually, when they see it, they actually see a different story.
Well, I like to think so. Yes, you can have solar-powered transportation in boats, and it can be practical. And besides that, it is very pleasant, quiet, there's no smell, there's very little noise. And so, yeah, that's an alternative way to move about the Earth.
I just wish that more people could see different stories, like electric trolley cars. You've talked about the trolley cars that used to be in Troy. Getting back to First Man, though, and Neil Armstrong, is there any relationship in terms of climate change? It's kind of easy to see how the Earth's atmosphere is warming with these trapped gases, and then things are getting to a more rapid boil, like the sea surface temperature rising, and then the storms getting stronger because the ocean surface temperature is just that much hotter. Is there any relationship to the moon, given this First Man cultural moment of the movie coming out? Is there any relationship between the air in the atmosphere and what happens just beyond the atmosphere and that trip to the moon?
Well, yes, space is very, very cold. The moon, where there's no sun shining, is very, very cold. And the sun shining on the astronauts and the LEM, the lunar module that landed, solar energy is very hot. The spacesuits that Neil Armstrong was in actually had to have cooling in them because the sunshine was so hot. Whereas if he had gone and landed on the dark side of the moon, they'd have frozen. So, yes, I would say that's a real connection.
Before this broadcast, you were talking about the amount of air between Earth and the moon.
Yes. Well, have you driven from Troy to Albany?
All my life.
Okay. Well, one-way trip between Troy and Albany, you go through more air than the amount of air between here and the moon.
Why? Why is there so little air?
Because that's all we've got. Gravity holds the air to the surface of the Earth, and there's a little bit of air that holds down the next little bit of air that holds down the next little bit of air, and so there's actually 15 pounds per square inch of air here on the surface of the Earth. But as you go up, you've gone up above some of that air, and then above some more, and above some more, and above some more, and somewhere up there, let's just pick a number, 90 miles, we say there's really no air left, and you're in space.
Wow. So 15 pounds per square inch is the sea that we're swimming in on planet Earth.
Yes. We're okay. Sitting here breathing it and talking through it. And it's all around us. And we don't pay attention to us because, you know, unless there's a hurricane that's blowing that wind so fast, maybe if you're in a sailboat, you notice the wind. But anyway, it's there. And without it, you don't survive.
Do you think this is just a random thought that popped into my head when you said that about sailing and given the solar boat connection too, do you think if we still lived in a culture that was more nautically based, you know, I mean, in the 19th century, we had a more nautically based market world. Do you think that people would pay attention to different environmental issues more?
Yes, if you're nautically based, you have to pay attention to the weather and the environment, because if you don't, you're probably going to have a problem, a shipwreck or something, and die.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Borton.
It's always a pleasure, Megan. Thank you.